You are listening to Pastor Talk.
Leadership. How does a decision get made in this church?
That's good.
You know, because if you get there, everybody's talking about the pastor, and you get here and you realize, oh, I'm not really the pastor. It's that deacon down the street. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's that elder down the street. It's Johnny who's been here 100 years kind of thing. You know, how does a decision get made?
Welcome to Pastor Talk, the podcast of Lifeway Pastors, giving you the tools and encouragement you need to shepherd your flock well. I'm your host, Marty Duran.
Welcome to another episode of Pastor Talk. I appreciate you joining me. This is Marty Duran, and I am happy to have as a guest today on Pastor Talk, Greg Mott, the pastor of Houston, Texas First Baptist Church. Greg, how are you?
I'm good. I thought for you were going to say the pastor of Houston, Texas. I moved up in the world.
That's kind of a goal, though, isn't it?
That's for the whole city. Yeah, there you go. We're going to take over. So, that's great. That's great. Man, I'm doing well. Everything's good. Thank you.
That's awesome. Now, our listeners are from all over, literally all over, and so they may not know you. They may have seen your name in print and not realized that Mott is spelled M-A-C-T-E. So, tell everybody a little bit about yourself. Who are you? Where you been? What you doing? What's your family like?
Yeah, that's great. I was born and raised here in Houston, and I did not become a believer until I was 16 years old. So I was sacking groceries in the suburbs of Houston, and the checker went to a church in our neighborhood, and they had told their student ministry that they should tell people about Jesus, and so she shared Christ with me. And then I met with our youth minister, and he led me to the Lord.
That's awesome.
And I became a Christian when I was 16. And a great story on him, he now is a member of our church. So he led me to the Lord, and now I'm his pastor.
That's awesome.
It's a total – isn't that great?
It really is.
It's a full circle. Yeah, and he's a great guy. What an amazing encourager. So I became a believer at 16 and then went off to A&M, Texas A&M, at 18. And my sophomore year, we started a Bible study, and it grew and grew and grew from 12 in our apartment to about 4,000 or 5,000 when I left. And now they had 10,000 28 years later in the football stadium to kick it all off, and it's called Breakaway Ministries.
Wow.
And so Breakaway is what I did for about 15 years and led that, and that was great, and just rode a rocket with that from my apartment to the basketball stadium is where we would meet. So God's done some great stuff, and now Timothy Atik is leading it and doing a super job, and so that's a real blessing. And then I just in my heart, I was so satisfied and feeling like it was a place to be, but I just thought, you know, I could do something different. It just was an odd thing to start something and then get to a place of thinking I could do something different. And right around that time, the pastor search committee of Houston's First Baptist called and said, you know, you've been guest speaking during the interim. We'd like to talk to you about being the pastor. And so I was like, oh, my goodness. So we met and talked a little bit and went through all of that kind of connections back and forth. And in that, I felt like I was supposed to be, the pastor put my name in for the at least the vote. And they felt like that. And so that was almost 14 years ago that I've been the pastor here. And so I had jumped into an amazing church, and God's doing great things. We're a multi-site church. So we have five campuses throughout the city. We're having a great time. God's using us in big ways, and the Lord's really moving, and it's a very good and healthy place. And the people love me, and I love them. And so that's kind of the ministry front. And then family-wise, I've been married 20 years, just celebrated my 20th anniversary, and have a 16-year-old son, and he actually just got his driver's license today. So he passed the test.
Wow, your prayer life just went up. As did your insurance.
My insurance and prayer life, that's right, just went up. So we're going to – so today, his driver's license day. So that's a good celebration, but a real rite of passage, which is great. And then my daughter is 10. 10 years old, and she's as cute as can be, and goes to school here at First Baptist Academy. So we're in the same building all day long. So I drop her off at school and see her, and she go eat lunch with her sometimes. And she's just a blessing. So my wife stays at home. She's takes care of the kids and me, and that's a full time enough job right there, which is great. So that's a little bit about me.
Now, I'm not sure about the timeline. Did you follow Dr. Bassanio? I mean, obviously that could have been an interim or something, but were you the next pastor right after him?
I was. We had an interim, and then from Brother John, and then an interim, and then me, and he and I still talk probably once a month. We're great friends.
Awesome.
You know, that's been something a lot of times when you have a patriarch and a legend who'd been here 30 years, and then you have this 33-year-old in me start being the pastor, you know, that could be really bad, but it turned out to be really good.
That's fantastic. That's awesome. So today we want to talk about the pastor search process kind of from the pastor's side. It's changed a lot since, I can remember the very first church that I pastored. I think I got two questions, one of which was, do you believe the Bible? like that generically. And when I answered, I believe it from Genesis to Maps, they didn't really know how to respond to that answer.
yes.
And then I think there might have been one more question, and that was it. And I was presented the next Sunday. And now there's, you know, you could do detailed questionnaires, you can do all kinds of things in that process, and it could take months and months and months. But I think the idea of what a pastor needs to ask today may be different than it was 30 years ago. How have you seen that process kind of morph over the process of time, and what do you see as important in it today from the pastor's side as they're talking to pastor search teams?
Yeah, you know, today, the change in our culture, we've heard it a zillion times, but we are such an information-based culture.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you pull up your phone, you pull up your computer. You know, I was on a news website before I got on the call with you, and you know, there's 500 stories I could read about. I mean, not really 500, but there's probably 25, at least on the front page. So information and the transfer of information is what our society is based upon. Therefore, when you get down to talking about a job, it's really good for information to be transferred back and forth. You know, we're used to that now, where maybe before the days you're talking about, there wasn't the amount of information. So people would make a decision based on two questions. You know, I mean, do we like you and do you believe the Bible? Okay, cool. Be our pastor. where now we've got so much more information we really need to know. And then I think too, we also have a decrease in the integrity of leadership throughout our culture. So, you know, you don't totally trust the politicians because, you know, maybe they've got a scandal behind them. You don't totally trust the financial institutions. Some people would say, well, man, the stock market's just a big gambling thing. You know, can you trust what's happening in a company? Can you trust what's happening at the church? We kind of hold our leadership with a little bit less integrity as a whole, not just pastors. Therefore, you need to verify, you know, you need to understand, who is this person that's calling me? You know, what is it that they want? What is this a real email? Is this a fake email? So we got information at a maximum and leadership integrity at a minimum, you know, as far as trust level.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've got to be able to get those two to meet, and that comes from asking good questions, clear questions, and making those contacts in, you know, between one another as a pastor and as a church.
So pastor search team calls Pastor Samuel and says our church is about a pastor. And you were recommended, or we saw your Vimeo account, or, you know, one of any other, we heard your podcast. Should a pastor have a series of questions that he asks before there's ever a meeting to weed, you know, to get a lay of the land? And if so, what would be some good initial questions before you ever get to a first meeting?
Yeah. Well, I think the first thing is the pastor needs to not feel like asking questions is rude. You know, you can ask questions in a rude way, but that doesn't mean asking questions are rude.
Right.
And so what's some questions to be able to have? So I would just let it be in that first one. You know, you want to look at it as an on-ramp. You know, you're going to ask more precise questions as you go further. But that first thing is, you know, how did you hear about me? You know, why did you call me? What's your interest? You know, get tell it, trying to figure out what what's going on with them? You know, why, how did my name hit your radar? Oh, John Doe suggests me. That's great. I know old John. That's great. How do y'all know John? You know, and being able to talk like that. Also saying, well, tell me a little bit about your church. Mm-hmm. And being able to hear about their church. What are you looking for in a pastor? And you're going to ask some of these same questions again, but you're just going to ask them in more specific ways. You know, there's really, you know, why me and why you as a church? I mean, those are the two big questions. Mm-hmm. And all the other questions are just falling in underneath that. So that's what I would do. And then I would just say, well, let me pray about it. Or, you know, I'm not interested. If you kind of get it feeling it out that you're like, this just isn't going to be a fit. You know, this is not who I am, then that's fine too. But to, you know, pray about it, show them that respect if you're interested at all. And then from that place, then hang up the phone. And then what I would say is get on the internet and find that website, listen to some previous messages, read their statement of beliefs, see what programs they have on, read their history, call a friend that you can trust that won't say anything. If that's, you know, if you got a friend good enough that would know something about it.
If you have one.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You gotta make sure it's the right friend. You can't just call the guy down the street, but somebody that's tight lipped that really loves you more than he or she loves anything else. Mm-hmm. And then I would just take it slow, you know, just being able to take it slow with the process. Because you'd rather, you know, no one ever minds when you take things slow. You can make bigger mistakes taking things too fast. And what I would say, you know, you want Isaac, not Ishmael, you know, and the story of that, Isaac took a long time. Ishmael took a short time. And by the same token, sometimes God's in it and it moves fast. Yeah, that's great too. So that's what I would say on that initial conversation.
What are the most important questions? I was typically hesitant to talk about, to bring up the subject of money and salary if they didn't bring it up first. That was just one that, I mean, I was raised where you trust God to provide for your needs and you just don't worry about the money. And the older that I got, or the older I have gotten, I should say, I realized that was some pretty bad advice, or at least I feel like now that was some pretty bad advice. Because the salary question is not carnal. It's not unspiritual to want to know what the salary is going to be, what any potential benefits are going to be, if I'm expected to cover insurance, that kind of thing. What are the important questions that you have to ask before you say I do?
Yeah. I think they fall into some categories. And the first category that I would say would be expectations. Mm-hmm. And that would be you know, a big category. And I would say this, what are the expectations of me, first of all? You know, what are you wanting the pastor to do? Some churches, when they say pastor, they mean visitor of people in hospitals.
Right.
You know, some people say pastor and they mean preacher. Others mean my best friend. You know, I mean, what do they mean? What are the expectations that are laid out and how do those fit with your giftedness? Because every pastor knows you're going to have to do a lot of things and some of those are not going to be in your perfect giftedness. But at the same time, if the majority of them are outside of your giftedness, you're going to be frustrated. So that's a problem. I would take the expectations underneath that as well to say, what are the expectations on my wife, on my kids? So for instance, in my situation here at Houston's First, we discussed those things. I actually typed out a 2-page document of a job description of what I felt like I was going to do as the pastor, had the pastor search committee chairman sign it. I signed it and chairman of Deacon signed it. You know, and it didn't have any monetary issues on it. It just had, this is what's expected of me and this is what we're agreeing upon. And that was just something I wanted to do because I wanted to make sure I understood. Not that I was saying to them, I think you're going to trick me. You know, I just wanted to understand clearly because this was going to be a new role for me. Mm-hmm. And then I also asked, is there any expectations upon my children to go to the church school in my context? You know, which they did and they do. And it's an amazing school. And First Baptist Academy has been the biggest blessing to us. But what if I'd have gotten here and realized 6 weeks in, the school needs to be a total turnaround, or the school needs to be shut down, or, I'm not going to put my kids' education and my vocation on the same table. You know, I think that's a great way to tick off a pastor's kid, right? I got to go to this school because dad works here. You know,
yeah.
What's the expectations on my wife? You know, do you think this is a 2-for-1 deal? Now, wives are going to be involved in ministry at some level, but is she expected to head up the women's ministry? You know, what's the expectations here? So that's the first.
The question is, what musical instrument does your wife play? That's probably a good indicator.
Right, yeah.
One deal.
Yeah, and then if they ask for your wife's sermons, then you know you're in trouble. You know.
Yeah,
you're in trouble then. So I think just those basic expectations we can be asked with a smile. Say, you know, and when if God leads me here, I'm going to give you 110%. I just want to make sure that what you know I'm bringing apples. And you want apples, not I'm bringing apples and you want oranges. So what's the expectations? And under that, what you can find out a lot by is, tell me 4 or 5 things that the previous pastor did that the church just loved. What were his strengths? And they go, he could preach. Well, then you know, okay, this is a preaching church. Oh, I tell you what, when I broke my leg, he drove 300 miles, you know, to put me in the back of his car and drive me back. So
check,
I didn't have
please.
To pay the ambulance.
Check, please.
Yeah. You're like, okay, that's not going to work for me. So, but you find that out because, you know, there's different ways of pastoring. I mean, everybody's got to preach. Everybody's got to, you know, love on people. Everybody's got to do funerals and, you know, that sort of thing. But what's the expectation on that? So that's, and for me, and I would say this to younger pastors, you have to be really clear that there's a part of the pastorate that was made for empty nesters. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, I'm not one. I have young children. That means I'm not going to be at every committee meeting. I'm not going to be at every, you know, gala or dinner. We're not going to be able to eat at everybody's house. I'm going to be coaching Little League. I'm going to be out on the ball fields with my kids. And they actually applauded that. They said, that's what we want. And then that becomes a ministry tool because you're out in the community. So expectations are key. The second category I would give would be challenges. What are the challenges of this position? What are the challenges that y'all have found as a church in reaching the neighborhood or the area of town that you're in? What are some of the challenges of the church? What's been the financial challenges? What's been the vision challenges? And trying to find out those sort of things, because those challenges will also present to you your opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
So that you're able to say, okay, hey, that's a challenge, but we can make that. That's actually an opportunity. So I think that's the second question to be able to do. And then I would put the third category out of 4 would be the logistical, and that's where you're talking about the finances. And tell me about the finances of the church. How much debt do you have? Now, this is going to be – you're on further along this isn't day one or meeting one. We're down there because, you know, they're about to bear the soul of the church to you.
Right.
You know, can I see a copy of the budget that was presented last year? So you're able to see missions dollars. You're able to see debt dollars. You're able to see that sort of stuff and just see those sort of things. And of course, the timing of that question has got to be appropriate. But you're able to see a little bit about that. Tell me, you know, are we healthy as a church? You know, are you healthy as a church in that realm? And then I think that's a place to say, you know, I've learned about you. You know, can you tell me what can I expect from y'all? How do y'all handle the financial arrangements with the pastor? You know, what does that look like?
Mm-hmm.
And that's different than saying, how much am I going to get paid?
Right.
You know, can you tell me a little bit about the benefits, the insurance? The time off, do you have a sabbatical policy? You know, let's talk a little bit about the logisticals on what a year looks like in the pastor's life, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I would encourage one of the key things is to be able to discuss sabbaticals. I think a lot of our pastors are dying on the vine because they never have a time of sabbatical. And that's a whole lot easier to negotiate at the beginning than it is at the end, you know.
How often? Go ahead and give a good estimate of how often a sabbatical should be requested or granted.
Yeah, you know, I mean, every year is awesome. You know, I mean, obviously, and I know everybody can't pull that off, but I would say, you know, 5 to 7 years, 3, 5, 7 years, those kind of odd numbers. You know, if you look at 1, 3, 5, 7, that's about as far as you want to go. I mean, 7 years is a long time.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, if you can figure out how to basically be out of the pulpit 4 weeks in a row, is what I do on my sabbatical time, out of the office, and you use it as a place. It's not just a vacation. You know, it can be a study sabbatical. It can be a learning sabbatical. It's going to depend on the monetary places of the church, if they're able to afford that, you know, so to speak. But at the same time, you know, they would rather you're going to do a better job. If you preach 42 weeks a year fired up, you're going to be better than 52 weeks a year mediocre.
Right.
You know, it's actually going to be a blessing to your church. So I would say that would be a thing to just be able to discuss. You could do a little research beforehand and then be able to do that. But, man, it's hard to be a pastor. There's an emotional, you know, tank that gets depleted. And so I think that would be a good thing. And then the fourth and final one, and then you can ask me any questions about any of these. So expectations, challenges, logistics, and then leadership. How does a decision get made in this church?
That's good.
You know, because if you get there, everybody's talking about the pastor, the pastor, the pastor, and you get here and you realize, oh, I'm not really the pastor. It's that deacon down the street. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's that elder down the street. It's Johnny who's been here 100 years kind of thing. You know, how does a decision get made? And am I free to preach whatever I want? And is the staff, am I free to build the staff? You know, what does this look like and how does a decision get made? And I think if you get those four categories, expectations, challenges, logistics, and leadership, that's going to give you a pretty good impression of what you need to know. And you can do that in a very polite way over the right course of time.
Yeah, I really like your suggestions. The word that came to my mind as you were working through, especially at the financial part, was they are gentle questions. They're not passive, but they are they're offered in such a way you're seeking information without it looking belligerent or self-serving. So I think that's really, really good.
Yes. Yes.
So the pastor gets to the church. He's been called. He thinks he's hit all of the bases. Thinks he's asked all the questions, gets to the church and realizes there is a big problem with just pick a thing. And he realizes it was a question he should have asked. Maybe it was one that came into his mind when he's in the meeting, but the only one he forgot to ask, and it's sitting right there in front of him. It's a big thing.
Mm-hmm.
How do you go back? How do you handle something that you have to own that you missed it, but it was important enough that it potentially, you know, could have kept you from coming to the church?
Yeah.
How do you loop back around then and say, how can we address this in a way that's productive? How do you do that?
Yeah. I think the first thing is you just got to trust the sovereignty of God at that point, you know, that God led you there. Nothing's perfect. It's never going to be perfect. And you just, whether it was naivete or it was ignorance or it was fear, for whatever reason, you're where you are. You prayed about it. God led you. And this is just part of the deal, you know, and just trusting the sovereignty of God. Second thing I would say is to get with somebody trusted in leadership of the church, a deacon, an elder that's been there a good while, that's a friend also to the pastor, not just a person, but a friend, and to take them to lunch, sit down with them and say, can you give me some wisdom about XYZ? You know, here's what I think we need to do, and then use it as an opportunity even to bring change in leadership. I mean, not change in leadership, change as you lead is what I'm trying to say, where you go, you know what, let's do this because we've typically done this, but let's also do this because this would be a better way of solving this. Or this is something we haven't faced in a long while. What I'd like to do is X, Y, Z. What are y'all's thoughts about us handling this problem in that way? You see what I'm saying? And now you're actually using it as an opportunity to administer change, to be what would happen. So that's, that was a really, you know, that's a, that would be a, an aspect of that that would be a good thing. We changed a lot when I got here. Some of the things we changed, you know, wasn't really, you know, we had a bookstore that wasn't doing as well as it needed to do, and we had a library that wasn't doing as well as it needed to do, and they wouldn't have kept me from coming. But I had to nuance, how are we going to do this? So we ended up combining the two so that we have books to buy and books to borrow.
Mm-hmm.
And it was good because the church library is very important. I had them do a study. I said, I want to know how many books have not been checked out in the last 5 years. Nobody's checked them out. And what you find is hundreds.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, well, let's move those books, and we're going to move them to a warehouse we have. And if anybody checks out that book, it'll still be in the computer. We will promise them that we will have it back at the church within 24 hours. So let me tell you, exactly zero of those books were ever checked out.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah, no good.
But we had a plan in place that didn't negate the value of the church library, didn't mm-hmm. negate the book that was bought in honor of Aunt Thelma's passing.
Right.
You know, we did that. So we nuanced it. We downsized the bookstore, so now the bookstore is profitable. We combined them together, so now the bookstore and the library have more traffic, and we were able to solve that problem by doing something a little bit new, but also protecting ourselves in the process of it. So that's just awesome. An example.
I've been talking to Greg Mott, the pastor at Houston's First Baptist Church, or as we like to call him, the pastor of Houston, Texas, talking about questions pastors should ask pastor search teams. Such an important subject. If you listen today and you got blessed by it, I hope you'll encourage, especially if you know other pastors who've struggled in this area, or who feel like that they've gone to a place and maybe been duped. I know that's a pretty harsh word, but it does happen. So share it with some folks, and maybe they'll be encouraged. Greg, I really appreciate you being on Pastor Talk today.
Oh, my joy. Man, I love my fellow pastors, and any way we can help one another out is a blessing, and so this is great, and if they listen to this podcast and it doesn't turn out, I just want an asterisk here that they cannot blame me, okay? So we're trying to be as helpful as we can, but nothing's perfect.
That's awesome. That is fantastic. Well, thanks for being with us, and thanks, everyone, for listening. And until the next time, this is Marty Duren for Pastor Talk.
Pastor Talk is the podcast of Lifeway Pastors and is hosted by Marty Duren. That's me. Join us each week as I interview pastors, authors, professors, and others to help your ministry as you seek to shepherd your flock well. Until next time, this is Marty Duren.